Hi, I'm Drew. I talk with fellow outcaster Lucas about LGBTQ youth suicide and education.
Indian culture is also pretty gay. But gay culture is really Indian.
Sing, sing, sing that Looney Tune.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Human rights conferees evade Lebanese security shutdown. Queer youth demand adult action to stop bullying and suicide, and we focus on star of songs and screen, Jennifer Cordae. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Michelle Yater.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news inter-affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending October 6th, 2018. Lebanese security forces invaded a regional queer rights conference at a Beirut hotel this week after a conservative Muslim fringe group complained that it was promoting homosexuality and drug use. They demanded the cancellation of the rest of the conference and the arrest of its organizers, calling the planned four-day event an incitement to immorality. What's come to be known as NEDWA, the Northeastern Dordogne Women's Association, is an annual conference that's been organized by the Arab Foundation for Freedom and Equality, or AFE, since 2013. It attracted more than 100 activists from the Arabic-speaking Middle East and North Africa region this year to workshops focusing on human rights and featuring presentations by queer rights leaders. Security officers temporarily detained AFE Executive Director Georges Azzi, demanding that he sign a pledge to shut down the rest of the conference and cease any further activities related to it. When he refused, security officers told the hotel that they were shutting the conference down. Officers also gathered the names, personal details, and passport copies of all of those in attendance, alarming several participants from repressive regimes in countries like Egypt and Iraq, who feared persecution, arrest, or worse when they returned home.
After being counseled by AFE lawyers and lawyers from one of the country's leading queer rights advocacy groups, HELEM, Azzi signed an agreement with the security forces promising not to organize an LGBTQ meeting at the hotel the next day. But, as attendee Outright International's Jessica Stern noted in her personal account of the events, he said nothing about other days or venues. Azzi found another hotel that was willing to take them in, and the rest of the conference was held without incident, although some activists who were shaken by the security forces' experience decided to leave before its conclusion. Lebanese LGBTQ people have been on a rights roller coaster this year. An appeals court ruled in July that the country's penal code section that punishes sexual acts that contradict the laws of nature does not specifically outlaw homosexuality and acquitted 9 people who had been prosecuted for having consensual adult gay sex. But just a month earlier, the organizer of Beirut's annual Pride Festival was threatened with arrest on charges of immorality if the event went forward, forcing him to cancel everything. Azzi held a defiant press conference as the dust was settling from this year's stressful NEDWA gathering. "These kind of attacks are expected, and there is no activism without risks," he said. "But we need to be more prepared, stay united, and help each other to stand up and continue the fight."
Switzerland's National Council voted this week to punish homophobic and transphobic discrimination with up to 3 years in prison. The 118-60 vote puts anti-queer hate on par with the country's laws against bias based on race, national origin, or religion. The bill, sponsored by Swiss Socialist Party council member Matthias Renard, still requires approval by the Council of States, but LGBTQ rights groups cheered the lopsided vote in the lower house. Marriage equality remains elusive in Switzerland, and Renard says that's his next goal. Unlike many of its European neighbors, queer Swiss couples have only been able to enter into less-than-equal civil partnerships since 2007, which deny them tax benefits similar to those given to married heterosexual couples, as well as adoption rights and access to welfare and fertility services, among other perks. The Council of States will vote on Renard's queer anti-bias proposal in December. Following the National Council vote, the notably heterosexual lawmaker told reporters that homophobia is not an opinion, it's a crime.
The Inter-American Commission on Human Rights emphatically told representatives of the Chilean government during a meeting in Boulder, Colorado this week that it must move forward with marriage equality, not only to comply with an agreement signed in 2016 between the country's leading queer rights group and the government of former President Michelle Bachelet, but also to comply with the January 2018 Inter-American Court of Human Rights ruling that ordered signatory nations to the American Convention on Human Rights to open civil marriage to same-gender couples. Representatives of conservative Chilean President Sebastián Piñera claimed that his government had promoted marriage equality, thereby complying with the settlement agreement. Rolando Jiménez was among several leading queer activists to deride that assertion as a complete fallacy. "They have not lifted a finger in favor of this law," he said, "and, worse still, their officials have spoken out against equal marriage." A commission representative will moderate a new meeting of the working group sometime soon in Chile, which was established when representatives of the government and queer activists hammered out the marriage equality settlement agreement in 2016. The Bachelet government's two-year-old marriage equality bill remains stalled in Congress, where it is now said to have majority support.
Meanwhile, the administration of U.S. President Donald Trump continues to reverse LGBTQ advances made during the tenure of Barack Obama. In a statement published on its website this week, the State Department warned that, effective immediately, U.S. embassies and consulates will adjudicate visa applications that are based on a same-sex marriage in the same way that we adjudicate applications for opposite-gender spouses. The new directive also applies to staff at the United Nations, the World Bank, and the International Monetary Fund. In practical terms, even though the policy ostensibly puts same-gender couples on the same footing as heterosexual couples, U.S.-based queer employees of international organizations and foreign missions who are not legally married to their partners must now do so or face not being able to live together. Foreign Policy magazine counted at least 10 partnered queer employees at the New York headquarters of the UN alone who will be affected. Only 25 of the 193 member states of the UN have opened civil marriage to same-gender couples. Private consensual adult same-gender sex is against the law in some 70 countries. So a queer staff member from one of those countries working at a global organization or foreign mission in the U.S. or at a U.S. embassy or consulate must now choose between the person they love or potential persecution at home for getting married, a dilemma not faced by heterosexual couples. David Pressman served as U.S. Ambassador to the UN Security Council for Special Political Affairs under President Barack Obama. He told NBC News that, "If that's how you advance equality between same-sex and opposite-sex partners, then we have an enormous problem on our hands." Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council, identified by the well-respected Southern Poverty Law Center as an anti-queer hate group, predictably applauded the move. "Thank goodness for the Trump administration," he said in a blog posting, "which has proven time and time again that its focus is religious freedom and human rights for everyone, not special rights for a select few."
But finally, three Christian pastors in Rumford, Maine, were unable to ban the display of queer-positive books during the local public library's end-of-September observance of the American Library Association's annual Banned Books Week. Their letter to the local library's Board of Trustees complained that including LGBTQ-themed books in the banned books display promoted homosexuality. Rumford is a small town in western Maine with about 5,000 residents. LGBTQ-themed books have dominated the American Library Association's annual list of the country's top 10 banned books for the past several years. And Tango Makes Three, the children's book about a real-life male penguin couple at New York's Central Park Zoo who adopt an abandoned egg to raise as their own, is one of the perennial top 10 entries, as is the lesbian-themed classic The Color Purple. Library employee Marianne Fournier defended the inclusive display during a public meeting of the library trustees. She said the controversy had forced her to come out. I've been coming to this library just about every day since I was 5 years old, she said, and now I work here. After pointing out that the pastor's letter didn't object to the banned book's display of 50 Shades of Grey, which contains scenes of heterosexual sadomasochism, Fournier said, I don't want to hide. I hid for a long time, and now I'm wondering what my father's going to think when I go home. And now you want me to hide the LGBTQ books that are like Bibles to some of these children, she said, pointing out that they're frequently stolen by some of these LGBTQ teens because they don't want their parents to know they're checking them out. Several dozen people who had crammed into the public meeting because it would be dealing with the pastor's published pronouncements loudly cheered her remarks. In the end, the Rumford Public Library Board of Trustees voted unanimously to maintain the queer inclusive Banned Books Week display.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending October 6th, 2018. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at the always evolving thiswayout.org. Where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Michelle Yater.
This just in, Romania's referendum to redefine marriage in the Constitution as between one man and one woman has failed due to low voter turnout. 30% of registered voters were needed to make the result valid, but only 20% showed up at the polls. LGBTQ and human rights activists campaigning against the constitutional amendment had urged a boycott of the referendum. Their efforts apparently worked. Even though civil marriage is still not open to lesbian and gay couples in Romania, the amendment would have effectively put any future legal recognition of those relationships out of reach.
Well, folks, we'll be back in a minute with more excitement right after this word.
I liked beer. I still like beer. Had beers. Have some beers. One beer. Drink beer. Drinks beer. Drank beer and drinking beer.
Beer, beer, beer. Beer, beer, beer. Beer, beer, beer. Beer, beer, beer. Beer, beer, beer. Beer, beer, beer. Beer, 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 beer.
I like beer. I don't know if you do.
Okay.
You like beer, Senator?
On August 23, 2018, Jamel Miles killed himself. He was 9 years old and had come out as gay a few days before committing suicide.
Queer youth tell us how to make it get better later in the program. The revival of the beloved and biting sitcom Murphy Brown has brought a new queer star to U.S. network television. Nick Dodani made his late-night stand-up comedy debut last week on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert as his new show was premiering. He joked about his Indian heritage and being a gay man.
It's tough being Indian and gay because Indian culture is still pretty homophobic, which is weird to me because Indian culture is also pretty gay. Just last year, Bollywood released 1,100 movies, almost every single one of them. A musical. After I wrote that joke, I had the strange realization that not only is Indian culture really gay, but gay culture is really Indian. You have bright colors and rainbows everywhere. People worshiping goddesses everywhere. The thing about gay culture that bugs me the most is that as a gay man, you're expected to label yourself, you know? You have bears who are the big burly gay men. You have twinks who are the younger slender gays. And you have otters and cubs and koalas, probably. What if we started doing that to straight guys? You'd have the weasel. That's the guy that pretends to respect women in order to get laid. And then you have the, well, I guess that's it. The hardest thing about being gay by far is coming out to your parents. There's nothing more nerve-wracking than that. And in Indian culture, there's a tradition where parents arrange their kids' marriages. My parents had an arranged marriage. I thought the one benefit of coming out to my mother would be that she wouldn't push that on me anymore. But she is a dedicated woman. Just last week, she posted an ad on Craigslist that read, "My son, 24 years old, Indian, gay, works in entertainment, seeks Indian lesbian facing similar family pressure."
Gay Indian comedian Nick Dadani of Murphy Brown displayed his stand-up skills on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert.
Make them laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh?
I'm Kate Clinton, and while I can joke about the political state of our country, it's no laughing matter what Congress could do to our civil rights. An informed community is a strong community. That's why I'm inviting you to tune in to this station to hear This Way Out.
Corday will make your heart beat faster, but first...
Everyone thinks that I'm a freak, the way I dress, the way I speak. I'm too thin, I hate my voice. I'd switch lives if I had the choice. I'll be tall and rich someday. Everything will go my way. Someday, someday.
Several years ago, a rash of highly publicized queer teen suicides brought tons of media coverage to the issue. Even though the headlines have been quiet, the horrifying situation continues, and the queer youth broadcasters of Outcasting Overtime want to see the problem addressed now.
This is Outcasting Overtime, a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Hi, I'm Dhruv, a youth participant in Outcasting's main studio in Westchester County, New York. On this edition, I talk with fellow Outcaster Lucas about LGBTQ youth suicide and education, focusing on the tragic story of a 9-year-old boy who took his own life. On August 23, 2018, Jamel Miles killed himself. He was 9 years old and had come out as gay a few days before committing suicide. The first person he came out to was his mom, and she affirmed her love for him. He proceeded to come out to his classmates, who bullied him relentlessly. He committed suicide just 4 days after coming back to school and telling his classmates that he was gay. This bullying was nothing new. His mother had been in contact with the school's administration in the past about bullying that he had experienced. This all happened in Colorado, a fairly liberal state, and yet the message that the children carry with them is that being gay is inherently bad. Schools and the government do not do nearly enough to make sure that LGBTQ children are accepted and not bullied. A possible reason for this ingrained lack of knowledge about LGBTQ people is media balancing. The media often bring in so-called family organizations, which are primarily anti-LGBTQ, in order to provide a viewpoint to balance coverage of LGBTQ issues. Some of these family groups have been designated as hate groups by the Southern Poverty Law Center, which has a long and distinguished history of identifying hate groups. The issue is that these anti-LGBTQ groups spread misinformation that has no basis in fact. This balancing is the same as bringing a member of the KKK onto a talk show to oppose a black civil rights activist. They provide no valid viewpoints and only serve to convolute the conversation surrounding LGBTQ people. This can ultimately lead to children being taught that homosexuality is negative if they know what it is at all. On top of that, the message being sent out by influential people is often negative. For example, the Office of the President should be a beacon to guide the nation in all affairs, especially ethical ones. But Donald Trump serves as a beacon for all those who hold homophobic beliefs, not only accepting but also encouraging the message that the LGBTQ community is different and should be excluded. His administration has dismantled supports to provide equal health care to LGBTQ people and has opposed supporting LGBTQ students. Education and messaging that being gay is not something negative are necessary for a better tomorrow, but this is not usually taught in schools or at all. Lucas, would you like to tell us about your experience with LGBTQ youth in school?
Yes, I would love to. I went to elementary school in California, and for the most part, I would say we are a relatively homogeneous and caring and loving group. But somewhere through elementary school, there was this one kid that was different. We weren't sure what was different about him, but he was definitely not the same as everyone else. And people started making fun of him and bullying him. And eventually, someone learned the word gay and started calling him the word gay. And throughout this whole period, we had learned nothing from the teachers or the administration about the LGBTQ community or what the word gay meant. In general, we just assumed it meant something bad, and soon the whole grade had picked up on it. We weren't only calling that kid gay, but if something was bad, we'd call, like, that tree is gay, which just meant that tree is bad. I eventually found out what the word gay and just more about the LGBTQ community, not from the school, but from my mom when I went home. She explained that it's just someone that likes someone from the same gender. And at that point, the negative seed that had been growing and the connotation that had been placed with that word was extinguished. But before that, it seemed like something natural that was just evil. Even after this point, many kids at my school still use this word as something that's negative, or evil in this case. And throughout this whole period, the administration never taught us anything. And this all happened in California, which is, of course, also a very liberal state. We can only imagine how much worse it is in states with worse representation of LGBTQ people in the media and by their local government. This cannot be the norm for another generation of LGBTQ youth, or, in fact, for any youth. This lack of education and bad representation of LGBTQ people is not just an inconvenience, it is killing the LGBTQ youth of today. Teen suicide and LGBTQ suicide is preventable. If you feel the need to talk to anyone, the Trevor Project has trained counselors on a safe and judgment-free hotline at any time. Call 1-866-488-7386 or contact them online at thetrevorproject.org.
Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, a nonprofit organization. Our assistant producer is Josh Valley, and our executive producer is Mark Sofis. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to Outcasting and Outcasting Overtime. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra.
Have you checked our website lately? For now playing information and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, log on to thiswayout.org.
The LGBTQ indie music scene is full of well-kept secrets. Even an aficionado like Steve Sims can be surprised, as he is in his latest This Way Out music focus.
Oh, oh, oh.
Much of my life is immersed in music. From my daily work, weekly productions, and general leisure time, music is always in the forefront, or at least in the background. Yet every day, I'm reminded of how expansive music is, and how little I know.
Drink, I won't smoke, I won't cheat and steal. So please, Mr. St. Nicholas, don't leave me hanging here.
That's Jennifer Cordae, or just Cordae. And no, I'm not launching the holiday season just yet. Cordae's song Mr. St. Nick is an example of how limited what I know about music can be. That upbeat Christmas song from Cordae was released in 1991, but until recently, that's all I associated the name Cordae with. Then I saw a posting that the music video of her song Heartbeat would be screening at the Indianapolis LGBTQ Film Festival being held November 9th through 11th. Envy Records calls Heartbeat a compelling journey through heartbreak and heartache. Seeing the posting got me thinking about Cordae and what else I might not know. I learned her song Pie was included on the soundtrack for the MTV series Undressed, which follows the relationship of young people in the Los Angeles area. Cordae also wrote the soundtrack for Nicole Kahn's 2010 film, Alina Undone, about a romance between a mother and pastor's wife and a well-known lesbian writer. In a movie review of Alina Undone by William Eamon Workman, he wrote that the music is magnificently done, particularly Jennifer Cordae's Coming Undone.
Strip off the ends of me, where I'm calloused. Come on, look inside. Reach in, find a piece of me. Hold on, pull till I unwind.
Cordae's anthemic sexy drinking song Second Shot is the title track of the series Second Shot, and can also be heard in the movie At Your Own Risk, which played opening night last April at the 2018 Women in Action Film Festival.
Wet my whistle. Just one more time.
Give me one more shot.
Jennifer Cordae has over 5 award-winning studio albums and 20 music awards. And her video for Dragonfire is setting fire to film festival screens across the country. Cordae played cello in her college chamber orchestra, was a substitute teacher, and then taught drama and English at Paramount High School in Paramount, California, where she acted as head of department and cheerleading advisor. She then transitioned to singer-songwriter-guitarist in the coffeehouse circuit. She founded Venus Envy, an organization that donates profits from compilation CDs towards the fight against breast cancer, in memory of her mother, Judy.
No one's ever got you yet. So sing, sing, sing that loony tune. Like a bird, you'll sing till you turn blue. I used to have hope you'd be saved. But now I know you're just...
This is Looney Tune, a favorite of mine off her latest album called You Can't Change My DNA, which was released September 1st. For This Way Out, I'm Steve Sims.
Oh, you've gone insane.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Christopher Gall and Michelle Yeader, produced with Brian DeShazer, from Outcasters Druv and Lucas, produced by Mark Sophos, and from Steve Sims. David Brown and Jennifer Cordae performed some of the music you heard. That beer commercial music came from the classic LP A Child's Garden of Grass, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors who make this program possible. Thanks for helping keep our 30-year streak going at thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media and wherever you get your podcasts. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WBCR, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, Plains FM, Christchurch, New Zealand, KSPC, Claremont, California, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now y'all stay tuned.